All right, shall we begin?
Om Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahavidyam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavadhitamastu Mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
And let us begin by reciting a few verses where we left off in chapter 2. Repeat after me, please.
Avyaktadini bhutani,
avyaktadini
bhutani, yaktamadhyani bharata,
yaktamadhyani bharata,
avyaktanidhananyeva,
avyaktanidhananyeva,
tatra kapari devana, Acharyavat pasyati kashchirenam, Acharyavat pasyati kashchirenam, Acharyavat varati tathaiva chanyah, Acharyavat varati tathaiva chan, Acharyavat chainam anyashrinoti, Acharyavat chainam anyashrinoti, Shrutva pyenam veda na chayva kaschat, Shrutva pyenam veda na chayva kaschat, Dehi nityam avadhyoyam, Dehi nityam, Dehe sarvasya bharata, Dehe
sarvasya
bharata, Tasmat sarvani bhutani,
Tasmat
Natvam shochitam arhasi,
Natvam shochitam
arhasi, Sarvadharman api cha, I'm sorry, Swadharmam api cha vekshya, Navikampitam arhasi, Dharmadhi yuddha chreyonyata, Dharmyadhi yuddha chreyonyata, Kshatriyasya na vidyate, Kshatriyasya na vidyate, Yadrichaya chopapannam, Yadrichaya chopapannam, Swargadvaram apavritam, Swargadvaram apavritam, Sukhina kshatriya partha, Sukhina
kshatriya
partha, Labhante yuddham idrisham,
Labhante
Ata chetvamimam dharmyam,
Ata chetvamimam dharmyam,
Sangramam nakarishyasi,
Sangramam nakarishyasi,
Tata swadharmam kirtim cha,
Tata swadharmam
kirtim cha, Hitva papam avapsyasi,
Hitva
Akirtim chapi bhutani,
Akirtim
Katayashyanti tevyayam,
Katayashyanti tevyayam,
Sambhavitasya chakirtir,
Sambhavitasya chakirtir,
Maranarati richyati,
Maranarati
richyate, Bhayadranaruparatam,
Bhayadranaruparatam,
Mansyante tvam maharataha, Mansyante tva maha, yesham chattvam bahumato,
yesham chattvam bahumato,
bhutva yasya silaghavam,
bhutva yasya silaghavam,
avacha vadam shabahun,
avacha vadam shab,
vadishyanti tavahitaha,
vadishyanti tavahitaha,
Nindanthastava samarthyam,
Nindanthastava samarthyam,
Tato dukkataram nukim,
Tato dukkataram. Ato va prapsyase swargam. Ato va prapsyase. Jitva va bhokshyase mahim. Jitva va bhokshyase. Tasmarutishtha kaunteya. Tasmarutishtha kaunteya. Yuddhaya krita nishchayaha. Yuddhaya Sukha dukhe same kritva.
Sukha dukhe same kritva.
Labha labhau jaya jayau.
Labha labhau jaya jayau.
Tato yuddhaya yujyasva.
Tato yuddhaya yujyasva.
Naivam papam avapsyasi.
Naivam papam avapsyasi.
Very good. We're continuing here in the middle of chapter 2, where Sri Krishna continues to work hard to prepare Arjuna to fight this terrible battle. You all know the setting. Arjuna has absolutely fallen apart, and Sri Krishna has already tried several strategies to empower Arjuna to get up and fight on the battlefield. Recall, please, that Arjuna, a good way to recapture everything we've seen, Arjuna is already incapacitated on the battlefield before the first arrow has been fired. And what has incapacitated Arjuna is his own emotions. This is a setup of the Bhagavad Gita. And to lift Arjuna out of his emotional turmoil, Sri Krishna began a very profound Vedantic spiritual discussion starting in verse 11 of the second chapter. And now we've come to another strategy, another way that Sri Krishna is trying to encourage Arjuna to fight. So the spiritual approach has already gone briefly, and there's much, much more to come. But what we saw in the last class is a shift of our perspective towards dharma. That is, the current message, and what we're going to discuss today, is Arjuna should fight the war because it is his swadharma. Now, before we continue in today's series of verses, we want to recapture one point that we made in last week's class. What is swadharma? What is your duty? What is your responsibility? And why should you do it? This really constitutes our discussion in our previous session. First of all, recall that this is a dharma yuddha. It is a righteous war, which we define extremely narrowly. A dharma yuddha is only a war in which not the fight causes more harm. That's it. And it was that kind of war, an unusual situation in which not fighting the war causes more harm than fighting. And it was Arjuna's swadharma. It was his own dharma, his own responsibility, his own duty to fight this war. Why? I'll give you a pop quiz on our last test. True or false? Arjuna had to fight because he was a kshatriya. False. Good. He was a kshatriya, but that's not the reason he had to fight. We went through that, but if you missed a class, you can get the tape. We won't explain it here. True or false? Arjuna had to fight to reclaim the kingdom that was unjustly taken away from them. True or false? False. Good. It's a fact that the kingdom was unjustly taken away from you, but just because something is unjustly taken away doesn't mean you kill someone. If someone takes your pen, do you clobber them? Okay. So it's a fact that the Pandavas were unjustly deprived of their kingdom. That does not justify bloodshed. So we discussed several times that the war must be fought for the sake of restoring dharma. That is, under the rulership of the blind king Dhritarashtra and his son Duryodhana, the kingdom is suffering like anything because of the bad leadership. Arjuna must fight to restore dharma. If Arjuna fails to fight, the Pandavas are certain to lose.
So it becomes Arjuna's personal responsibility, his swadharma, to fight that battle. And to pick up one other point from our previous class, remember that, in fact, a point we didn't make in our last class, this is even better. Why follow dharma? Why? So this is Arjuna's responsibility. Why should he do it? And we compared the Hindu concept of dharma to the biblical concept of Ten Commandments. And in our previous class, we discussed how the concept of Ten Commandments is a very limited, short-sighted perspective. We discussed how life is too complicated to reduce it to ten simple rules. So the ancient rishis, instead of giving a list of rules to be followed, the ancient rishis gave us a simple principle and told us to apply this principle to every situation in life and to do what is right for that unique situation. According to every situation is going to be different. You have to interpret what is right in every situation uniquely according to what principle? The principle of ahimsa, the principle that states that you should do whatever causes the least harm for everyone involved. We talked about that extensively in our previous class. Now, dharma means do what causes the least harm. In this unique situation, Arjuna's fighting is to prevent worse harm. We understand that. Now, most religions instruct you to follow dharma. Why? Most religions say, follow dharma, or in a biblical sense, follow these commandments. Why? Well, they put it pretty bluntly, follow these commandments or else. If you don't follow these commandments, what will happen when you die? Certainly, you will be cast to hell for all time, for all eternity. You will spend an eternity in hell. Several classes ago, we discussed, according to the law of karma, a logical problem with that doctrine. This is not to criticize a religion. This is only to make observations about theology. So according to that theology, for your finite sins, you can suffer in hell for all eternity. Does that work? Does that make sense? For your finite sins, you should receive finite suffering, which is what the law of karma says. So they have a different theology, a theology that appears to have some problem here. But the basic message of most other religions, and even Hinduism badly interpreted, the message is follow dharma or else. Right? Even the Hindus have their own version of it. Instead of follow dharma or you go to hell for all eternity, the Hindu version is follow dharma or you'll be reborn as a cockroach or something. That's basically the Hindu version. It's the same thing, and it's using a threat to make you follow dharma. This is a common approach. Perhaps it's the most common approach. Many of you have raised children, and I'm sure you would tell your children, if you don't do that, watch out. Well, I remember my mother's technique. Her technique, she in this country they say passing the buck. Her favorite phrase when I was this big was, wait till your father gets home. And I would tremble. So this is, that is, we're told to follow dharma because if we don't, there's a negative consequence. The Hindu perspective, properly understood, is much broader than that. No doubt, Hinduism has no shortage of that kind of threat. Follow this or else. We find plenty of that in Hinduism. But we also find a higher perspective, especially when you come to spiritual life. When you come to spiritual life, what motivates us, for example, in a Vedantic context, pursuing the inner divinity, pursuing the truth of Atma, which is not separate from Brahman, in that pursuit, we're not motivated by a fear of hell or a fear of being reborn as a cockroach. We're motivated by a genuine quest for spiritual growth. Then, if you are a sadhaka, if you're a spiritual aspirant on a spiritual path, your primary goal is not to avoid hell. Your primary goal is spiritual growth. If that describes you, you're on a spiritual path, you're not so concerned about being reborn as a cockroach, then from that spiritual perspective, what is the motivation to follow Dharma? And it's very different. If you want to achieve spiritual growth in life, follow Dharma because it's to your own benefit. And let's expand on that. Following a dharma, making mistakes in life, is going to hold you back on a process of spiritual growth. We already have too many problems, too many obstacles in life. Whatever you're trying to achieve in life, there are several obstacles. You're trying to achieve spiritual growth, there are obstacles to spiritual growth. Does it make sense to make more obstacles in our life? We already have too many. Well, look, when you go against Dharma, you are actually creating more obstacles to your process of spiritual growth. And let me make that very clear what those obstacles are. When you sit for prayer and meditation and spiritual study, contemplation, you want a mind that's free, a mind that's focused, a mind that's not distracted, a mind that's not wrapped up in confusion and turmoil. You want a calm, peaceful, quiet mind. All right. Consider that when you go against Dharma, when you make a mistake or do something deliberately against Dharma, what is the result? Isn't it true that generally when we go against Dharma, we create confusion and problems and conflict in our life? This needs to be explained. To go against Dharma is basically to go against the laws of the universe. In our previous class, we described the fundamental meaning of Dharma as the laws of nature, the laws of the universe, and from a moral standpoint, an ethical standpoint, the laws that hold together a society, that hold together a culture, that allow us to live together in peace and harmony. So when you go against Dharma, doesn't that place you in a state of conflict with other people? And the nice way to explore this is you probably know someone that has a nice term for it. You know someone who has convenient ethics. What are convenient ethics? They're ethical when it's convenient. So this is a person, you know someone like that, who routinely goes against ethical norms, who goes against Dharma. Tell me, that person that you know, do they seem like a very relaxed, peaceful, low-key, laid-back person? Or are they generally always in a state of conflict, fighting with someone, correct? Those people who have convenient ethics, who go against Dharma, end up fighting with people wherever they go. To go against Dharma puts you in a state of conflict, puts you opposed to other people. My guru, Pujaswami Dayananda, had a really hilarious way of describing the process when you go against Dharma. A few of you have heard him explain this. He says to go against Dharma is like, he says it's like rubbing up against something. And he specifically, he says, to go against Dharma is like rubbing up against the bark of a tree. And he explains, with your bare arm, you go on rubbing against the bark of this tree. And you observe that you rub the tree, but the tree rubs you back. After you're done rubbing really vigorously, nothing much happens to the tree. Look at your arm, all scratched and bleeding. he describes, when we go against dharma, we are rubbed back in the process. That is to say, we put ourselves in a state of conflict with others, and the more we go against dharma, the more we put ourselves in a state of conflict. And if you really want a life of prayer, meditation, and spiritual growth, is it not true that conflict is an obstacle? Fighting with others is an obstacle. Getting caught up in this mess that we make for ourselves. When we go against dharma, we can create a terrible mess for ourselves. And cleaning up that mess will absorb most of our energy. What time and energy is left for spiritual growth? So here the message, it's a very different message. Why follow dharma? Why do the right thing? Conventional wisdom says do it or else. The consequences are you'll be cast to hell for all eternity, according to the Bible. You'll be reborn as a cockroach, according to Hindu doctrine of reincarnation. But that is the threat approach. There's a positive reason to follow dharma. What is the positive reason? If you want to live a life free from conflict, free from chaos, free from confusion and tension and pressure, if you want to live a simple, quiet life which is conducive to spiritual growth, what is the message? Follow dharma. Follow dharma not to avoid punishment. Follow dharma because it's in your own best interest. What a refreshing message, I think. Instead of being told, follow dharma or else, here we're being told, follow dharma because it's in your best interest. And that is the message to Arjuna, Sri Krishna gave in the last several verses. Arjuna, this is your swadharma. This is your duty. This is your responsibility. Arjuna, go for it. Do it. Do what you must do. With that introduction, let's pick up the thread here. We have several more verses talking about following dharma. Sri Krishna continues to address Arjuna, telling Arjuna he must fight for the sake of fulfilling his dharma. Let's see what continues here. In verse 33,
Ata chetvamimam dharmyam, ata chetvamimam dharmyam, sangramam nakarishyasi, sangramam nakarish tatha swadharmam kirtim cha, tatha swadharmam kirtim cha, hitva papam avapsyasi, hitva papam avapsyasi.
Ata chet, but now, imam dharmyam sangramam, this righteous war, imam dharmyam sangramam, this righteous war, na karishyasi, if you do not do. Arjuna, suppose, atachet, suppose you do not take part in this righteous war, tataha, then, swadharmam hitva, you will give up swadharma, your own responsibilities, your own dharma, you give up your own responsibilities, kirtim cha, and you will sacrifice your fame. Arjuna is highly regarded. There's going to be much more about that. Arjuna is highly regarded, so he will sacrifice his own duty. He will sacrifice fame. And papam avapsyasi, Arjuna, you will gain avapsyasi. What will you gain? Papam, sin. Now, this papa can be interpreted either as making you get reborn as a cockroach, but the papa can also be interpreted as creating more obstacles, more conflict, more confusion, which will cause you to suffer in this life itself. Remember that the papa we incur when we commit wrong actions, the papa we incur doesn't all wait for the next life. A lot of the papa, the results of our bad actions, in fact, I would say most of that papa comes in this life itself. The idea is when you do something wrong, you're going to pay the price according to the law of karma. Most of the time, those undesired consequences come to you in this very life. You don't have to wait that long, maybe a year, maybe 2 years, But generally, those papa karmas, the undesirable results of your wrong actions, will affect you in this life. The idea is, if they don't all take place in this life, whatever doesn't take place in this life will catch up to you in a later life. So don't think, it's a funny metaphor. It's like using a credit card. You buy today, and you pay tomorrow, next month, next year, etc. Don't think that going against dharma is like using a credit card. That is, you incur sin today, but you have to pay the consequences much later. Much later could be tomorrow, not necessarily in your next life. Let's continue.
Akirtim chapi bhutani, akirtim chapi bhutani, katayashyanti tevyayam, katayashyanti tevyayam, sambhavitasya chakirtir, sambhavitasya chakirt, maranadati richyate, maranadati richyate.
Akirtim cha api bhutani katayashyanti, bhutani, all people. Katayashyanti, will say, will declare. Will declare what? Te akirtim. Te, your akirti, your infamy. Kirti is fame. Akirti is the opposite of fame. So, you know, think of a famous person. Nelson Mandela, Mahatma Gandhi are famous people. What is an infamous person? Like Saddam Hussein, like Adolf Hitler, that is widely known, but for their harmful actions. So here, Sri Krishna is telling Arjuna that if you fail to fight the war, that Bhutani, all people, Katayishyanti, will go on telling about your akirti, your infamy, of yayam, continually. They'll just go on. And which means sometimes people go on talking for a little while and then it dies down. Think of this. What we're starting to talk about, by the way, is a little bit like gossip. So think about negative gossip. Sometimes somebody does something really wrong or something. People will gossip. Eventually that gossip dies down, correct? But Sri Krishna warns here that this gossip is of yayam. This gossip is not going to die down, and we'll see why as we continue. Sri Krishna says, sambhavitasya cha akirtihi maranadati rachyate. Sambhavita means one who is famous. Sambhavitasya, for one who is famous. Arjuna is famous. He's not an ordinary person. He's not an ordinary warrior. In fact, he is the mightiest of warriors on that battlefield, and everyone knows. He was the star pupil of Dronacharya. He is one of the princes of the kingdom. Everyone knows Arjuna as this mightiest of warriors. So he is Sambhavita. He's famous. And Sambhavitasya, for one who's famous, akirtihi, infamy, maranat atirachyate, atirachyate, excels, to be very literal, maranat atirachyate, excels death. To translate it properly, infamy excels death, but it means infamy is worse than death. For a famous warrior, now this may not apply to you or me, if you were to run away from a battlefield, I think people would understand. Mostly, you know, and to create a scenario, if you were visiting someplace in New York City and some mugger pulls out a knife, if you drop your wallet and run like heck, you're smart. That's really the right thing to do. It's absolutely the right thing to do. Why? You're not a famous warrior. And if you try to resist this idiot with a knife, you know, it's just not the right thing. You're going to get hurt. It's not worth it. You know this. It's not worth it.
So if you run away from that kind of physical battle, you're smart, you're doing the right thing. But Arjuna is this most highly trained warrior. Suppose a policeman in uniform with his gun at his hip confronted this mugger. If the policeman runs away, we've got a problem. If you run away, good. If the policeman runs away, what is that? So Arjuna is like that policeman. So Arjuna cannot run away from this situation. He has to, and that's why it's said that this kind of akirti, this kind of infamy of a great warrior failing to fulfill his responsibility, this akirti maranat atirachyate is worse than death for a warrior. Bhayad ranaduparatam, bhayad ranadup, mansyante twamaharataha, mansyante twamaharat, yesham chattvam bahumato, yesham chattvam bahu, bhutva yasyasi laghavam, bhutva yasyasi. Very interesting argument that Sri Krishna pursues here for Arjuna. He says, bhayat ranat uparatam. Suppose Arjuna, well, actually we have to back up here. Maharataha yesham tvam bahumataha bhutva. Start there. Maharataha. Maharatha is a word for general. In the ancient times, it's a general. Somebody who is a commander of, I think, 10 chariots or 100 chariots. There's some numbers associated with this. Such a person is called a Maharatha. They are a general. Maharataha, the generals, the leaders, the commanders. All of the commanders, yesham, for whom, tvam bahumataha bhutva. Tvam, you Arjuna, bahumataha bhutva. They look upon you with respect. Bhutva, they have become. Bahumata, they have great regard for you. Arjuna, all he says, Arjuna, all these warriors, all these commanders on the battlefield, they all have great regard for you. Bahumata bhutva. But Arjuna, if you run away from the battlefield, yasyasi laghavam. Yasyasi, you will undergo laghavam, means lightness. And this, by the way, this is poetry. I give you the literal word-by-word meaning, but in poetry we have to interpret it properly. So the go to lightness, undergo lightness, means that these great commanders who looked upon you with such esteem, they're now going to look upon you as nothing, as useless, as worthless, as, in fact, in American English, we have this expression for laghavam, a lightweight. We use that expression. Who is a lightweight? Someone who's not capable, someone who's not competent is a lightweight. So Arjuna, Sri Krishna says, all of these great commanders on the battlefield who previously held you in such high esteem, they're going to look upon you as useless, as worthless. Tvam mansyante, and mansyante, they will regard tvam, you. How will they regard you? Uparatam, or not, bhayat. They will regard you as, I need to introduce this. You know, if Arjuna leaves the battlefield, why? Why does Arjuna really wants to walk away from this battle? There's no question about it. Why does he want to walk away? He doesn't want to see all his beloved family members die. And he doesn't want to be the instrument through which they die. That is, he doesn't want to kill them. He has tremendous compassion for all of his family members. And that includes the Kauravas. Of course, the Kauravas include his own family members. he doesn't want to see all of his beloved family members suffer and die on the battlefield. Out of compassion, Arjuna wants to leave the battlefield. But if Arjuna were to withdraw from the battlefield as all the warriors are watching, and they're watching, right? Where is Arjuna and Sri Krishna right now? They are in the chariot. The chariot is in the middle of the battlefield, stationed midway between the Pandava and Kaurava armies. They are right there in the middle of the battlefield in full view of all these generals, all the Maharathas. And if Arjuna were to withdraw from the battlefield, what will they conclude? Will these commanders say, "Oh, how compassionate Arjuna is"? Not a chance. What will these great military warriors conclude? That Arjuna left out of fear. Mansyante. They will conclude, they will assume, Twam, that Arjuna is uparatam, is withdrawing, Ranat, from the battlefield, bhayat, due to fear. Very clearly he says, if Arjuna leaves the battlefield, all the great warriors will conclude Arjuna has left not because of compassion, which is true, but he'll conclude that he's withdrawn, he's running away out of fear. To use the American expression, Arjuna has chickened out. And again, if some mugger has a knife to you, you better chicken out, because it's more important to save your life for yourself and your family. The wallet or the money or the purse is cheap. Let them have it. It's nothing. So for you to run away is absolutely the right thing. But for Arjuna to run away, it'll look like he's leaving out of fear. You can imagine how they're going to curse Arjuna and curse him in the previous verse of Yayam. Not just for a little while, generation after generation. You know, notice how heroes are famous for generation after generation. Today, we continue to exclaim the glories of great men like Mahatma Gandhi. Good. We also continue to declare the infamy of a man who died only a couple of years before Gandhi. I referred before to Adolf Hitler. So today, Gandhi is still famous. Today, Hitler is still infamous. In several generations, Gandhi will still be famous. In several generations, Hitler will still be infamous. This is going to go on generation after generation. So this is the message to Arjuna. Let's pause here and deal with this argument. The argument is, Arjuna, you should fight because what will they think? Now, please bear in mind that this is not the main argument Sri Krishna is using. The main argument, in fact, was that pure spiritual teaching that came earlier in chapter 2, that is, Arjuna, no one's going to die. Why? No one got born in the first place. The soul is eternal, unborn, uncreated, therefore not subject to harm, not subject to death. That was really the main argument. Now we're getting a couple of arguments which just come in passing. In fact, we could even argue that this current discussion has less to do with the spiritual teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. This discussion has much more to do with the story of the Mahabharata. Remember that the Bhagavad Gita is a 700-verse section that we take out from the Mahabharata to study independently. But that 700-verse section is not all spiritual teaching. It includes portions of the story that's unfolding. I would suggest that what we're looking at right now has got nothing to do with spiritual teachings, has everything to do with the story of the Mahabharata. And the basic message is, Arjuna, you know, for generation after generation, all of the people of this land are going to curse you if you run away from his battlefield, and they'll curse you as a lightweight, as a wimp, as someone who chickened out, who ran away from his terrible battlefield. So this is the message. It's not a particularly spiritual teaching. Don't confuse it. In fact, from a spiritual standpoint, is the opinion of others a valid criterion for your decisions? We want to discuss this. We didn't have a chance in our last class. Arjuna has an important decision to make. What should he base his decision on? To fight on the battlefield, to run away from the battlefield? Should he base his decision purely on the opinions of others? Does that sound like a good idea? Let's explore this. Certainly, Sri Krishna is telling Arjuna to consider the opinions of others, but is that really the reason Arjuna should fight the war? Certainly not. Remember, a lot of other discussion has preceded this. So it's already been established that, Arjuna, this is your dharma to fight. And this is a dharma yuddha that's already been established. So this is coming kind of in passing, this message of what will others think of you, what will happen to your fame, your glory. Let's consider our decision-making processes. In life, we also get into really complicated, confusing situations. Certainly, Arjuna's dilemma is an excellent metaphor for the complicated, confusing situations that we get into, for the messes that we get into. And the reason it's a good metaphor is, look at this. If Arjuna fights, people die. If Arjuna doesn't fight, people die. Right? Either way, it's bad. If Arjuna fights, there's a terrible war that will break out. If Arjuna doesn't fight, a terrible war will still break out. There's no avoiding the war. So, you know, in American English, if you forgive the word, they say, damned if you do, damned if you don't. This is exactly Arjuna's situation, and haven't we all been in the same kind of situation many times? We have to do A or we have to do B. If we take A, it's a huge mess. If we take B, it's a huge mess. And there's no way out. And then we're stuck trying to evaluate what is the best thing to do. We try to apply this principle of dharma. Do whatever causes the least harm. Sometimes it's not very clear. Life can be so confusing, so complex, that many times it's not obvious. What can I do which will cause the least amount of harm? When it's not clear, then sometimes we end up looking for side issues. That is, if we can't decide what is right or wrong based on the situation in front of us, sometimes we look to other issues to help us decide. Sometimes you ask your spouse, what do you think? Nothing wrong with, in fact, that's good. To get some advice is good. Of course, it's good to get advice from someone who can give you good advice. If your spouse is a source of good advice, by all means, ask your spouse. If your spouse is not always the best source of advice, then find someone else who can give you someone. Find someone that you can trust as a source of good guidance. Someone who's mature, someone who's clear-headed, someone who understands the situation very clearly, and someone who's unbiased. All right. Something else that a mistake that we also sometimes make when we're trying to figure out what to do in a situation is we consider, what will other people think? If I do this, what will they think? If I don't do this, what will they think? And we have to talk about this, because sometimes this concern about what other people will think, sometimes our over-concern for the opinions of others leads us to do the wrong thing. Will you admit it? I hope you can. This is a problem almost everyone has. Almost everyone. Concern about the opinions of others. If you're doing something that you know is right, but other people might think it looks bad, does that sometimes affect your decision? I'll give a very specific example, kind of a powerful example, but a good one. Suppose there's a family member with a drinking problem. It's not uncommon. A family member with a drinking problem. This person's drinking problem is so severe that person should receive some professional help, some professional care. That person should see a doctor, that person should go to some kind of clinic, that person should receive some professional support to come out of that addiction. Alcohol addiction is a terrible thing. You know that. But sometimes in a family, there's reluctance to seek professional care for someone with a drinking problem. Why? If you seek professional care, other people can find out, and what will they think of our family? What will they say about us? What will they think about us if they find out that he or she has a drinking problem? We don't want anyone to find out. Therefore, the problem is hidden away. That person is denied access to professional care, and the problem continues unabated. This, in my opinion, is a really terrible mistake and a sad scenario that's played out again and again in many different ways. You know what is right. You know what needs to be done. But sometimes it looks bad to others, and that's enough to deter you from what you know is the right thing or what is best. This is wrong. We are causing harm by not doing the right thing. We have to, and I know it's uncomfortable to deal with the opinions of others. But tell me, can we really live our lives so concerned about what everyone else is thinking? Are you willing to sacrifice so much for what everyone else thinks? And allow me to share with you a favorite example, and kind of a comical example of me. When I was at the ashram in Salersburg, every week I would be traveling. And often I'd be driving from program to program. I did a lot of traveling, and I'd always drive. So driving from program to program. And, of course, driving along in this big car that the ashram gave me, it would run out of gas fairly often, so I'd pull over at a filling station to get gas. You remember that New Jersey is the only state that pumps the gas for you. So then I would get out of the car and proceed to pump the gas. I only wear this clothing. So I'd be standing there dressed in this, like this, pumping gas, and other people are pulling up and getting their gas, and they're looking, and, you understand, of course, that in this country, people are pretty much unfamiliar with this dress. In India you see it sometimes. Even in urban India you won't see it very much, but at least it's understood in India. In this country, for all intents and purposes, they're looking at this little man wrapped up in an orange bedsheet, pumping gas. And, sometimes they'll smile, sometimes they'll look away because they don't want you to know that they're looking at you. So all of this. Now, early on, I had to deal with that. And because it's in this country, and there's actually a very touching story that goes along with this. When in 1993, I'd gone to India, and that's the time in which Pujya Swami Dayananda gave me sannyasa diksha. And as part of the rituals of sannyasa, you're given this cloth to wear. The cloth, of course, is traditional. The color represents a life of purification, life of seeking spiritual wisdom. So, and also he's a fairly traditional teacher, and all of his disciples, they all dress maybe slightly different styles, but basically the same kind of cloth. This is a very touching story. When I was getting ready to return to the ashram in Pennsylvania after spending that time in Rishikesh, Pooja Swamiji gave me an orange t-shirt. And he said, you know, you're going back to this other country, and you know, if you feel uncomfortable, you know, dressing like all of this, he said it's okay. So I said, okay, well, that's, you know, if he said it's okay, then it's okay. So then what I would do sometimes is when I was traveling, I would wear a t-shirt, and sometimes, you know, I'd change my dress a little bit to fit in better, but very quickly it didn't feel right. And this is what I had to deal with. By changing my dress to make others, to change my dress to look less weird to others, I was compromising something I took very seriously. Sannyasa. And diksha, an initiation given by my guru, and also this whole parampara, this whole lineage of sannyasis going back to the time of Sri Shankaracharya and beyond. So I wore that t-shirt and I changed my dress for a while, but very quickly I grew uncomfortable with modifying my dress. I realized if I'm going, you know, it's just not right to make a compromise on something that's so valuable, it's not right. So that led to the point where I'm out there pumping gas, dressed like this, and it gave me plenty of time to think about what other people are thinking about me. So picture me pumping my gas, wondering what other people are thinking about me. Natural. And it took me a while to come to this conclusion. What I concluded is this. What do these people know about me? Nothing. If they make a conclusion about me, it's because they don't know who I am, what I'm about. So they're making their conclusion based on inadequate information. It's inevitable that they're going to draw some weird conclusions. So finally I decided that any conclusion that they make about me is wrong based on lack of information, so it's okay. Further, if they think I'm some kind of weird kook dressed in an orange bedsheet, how does that actually affect me? Not at all. I eventually came to understand it doesn't make any difference. What I came to understand is what I'm doing is something, you know, it's something noble, it's something respectful, it's the right thing to do, and to make a compromise is, in my opinion, unnecessary and wrong. For me, it's wrong. If some other sannyasi wants to change the dress, I have nothing against it, but for me, it's wrong. It doesn't work. So, I came to understand that to be overly concerned about the opinions of others for the sake of protecting some kind of imaginary self-image, tell me, doesn't it come down to pride? Isn't it just a matter of pride? To compromise our principles for the sake of pride is a very sad compromise. So, even today, it continues. Still, when I travel, if I go to an airport, it's like this. What were some of the funniest situations? Oh, here's one, couple of funny ones. But one of the funniest ones, I mentioned this before. I was driving, and going back into Pennsylvania from New Jersey on Route 80. There's a toll bridge, so I'm at the toll, and this happened to be, I think, the day before or the day of Halloween. I'm going through the toll at night, The guy looks down, you know, they're up here and they can see in your car really nicely. This guy looks down and sees me like this, and he says, "Hey, man, cool costume." All right. I said, "Thanks, man." And I drove off. Why should that be an insult? It's not an insult. He doesn't know. If he doesn't know, why should it be understood as an insult? He doesn't know better. Why should I expect him to respond in any other way? Can't I be understanding enough to take something like that with a sense of humor? Well, of course. Now, let's apply this to some other situations in life. Suppose what I'm talking about is how other people can make wrong judgments about me based on my appearance. Good. How about you? Your appearance, probably not with regard to dress, but probably with regard to what you're doing. But even with regard to dress, I'm told that many young people, the second generation, several have told us that they were mortified when mom came to school in a sari. So that was a big thing for them. You know, what will my friends think? You know, but in all honesty, if a 9-year-old boy is embarrassed if mom shows up at school in her sari, I'll understand a 9-year-old boy. How mature is a 9-year-old boy? Can we do a little better than a 9-year-old boy? Yes. All right. So as adults, our commitment should be to doing what is right. And our commitment should not be appearing right. Isn't that politics? In politics, you always want to, it's all appearance. And they put spin on everything so that it looks good. You know, even for a politician to do that, don't you find it disgusting? When politicians are always manipulating public opinion. There's no politics is all about. To manipulate the opinions of others so that the politician always looks good. Well, tell me, isn't that a common pattern of behavior where we deliberately manipulate the opinions of others so that we look good? I'm not saying you should look bad, but if it means compromising your principles, if you have a choice between compromising important to principles and looking bad, in my opinion, look bad. Who cares? Big deal. So if other people, let's go back to our initial example. If all of your relatives find out that such and such a family member has a drinking problem, and because they've sought treatment, the whole family finds out, the whole extended family finds out, the whole community finds out, it feels like the whole world has found out this terrible secret. So, is yours the only family to have a member with a drinking problem? Hardly. Your family has problems? Tell me one family that doesn't. You have some deep, dark secrets. Good. Who doesn't? Every single person has things about themselves that look bad. We all look bad. Fine. Then why not just accept it? Why not learn to be comfortable with it? And here's a suggestion. I think you are all intellectually convinced that this is the right thing. That is to compromise our principles based on pride and compromise our principles so that we appear good to others. most of you will agree that intellectually, in principle, it's the right thing to do. But it's not easy to do. How to get over that hump. And maybe you can remember me pumping gas. It took me a while to get used to it. I got used to it fairly quickly and came to the point that it's okay. Whatever people look at me, they draw their own conclusions. It hasn't hurt yet. It's not going to cause any terrible damage. It's not a problem. It just took some getting used to. Suppose the next time you're in one of these situations and you're afraid of what other people will think, just picture me pumping gas. And just remind yourself that it's okay. If other people draw the wrong conclusion, it's okay. It's not a big deal. People are going to draw wrong conclusions. One more point we have to make here. Suppose I'm pumping gas and somebody is looking at me funny. Tell me, should I walk over to that person, introduce myself, and say, you know, I'm an ordained Hindu monk. I've been initiated as a Hindu sannyasi. And as a Hindu sannyasi, I'm required by monastic principles to wear this kind of garb. Should I explain myself? In fact, wouldn't that need to explain, that would show some problems on my part. People are going to make wrong conclusions about us. There's not much we can do. It's okay. We can get used to it. It's not a big deal. Some of the best advice I've ever had from my guru, of course, spiritual teachings, he was a reservoir of wonderful spiritual teachings. But I would also talk about him about all kinds of worldly things. And one of his bits of advice about worldly things that was so simple but brilliant, and you can remember this as well, he said, don't expect others to understand you. It's too simple. Don't expect others to understand you. Tell me, do you understand everyone else? We get baffled day after day. People do things we don't understand. Do we ever draw wrong conclusions about others? Yeah, frequently. We don't understand others. We draw wrong conclusions about others. We don't understand. People are so complicated. Their behavior is so strange. We don't understand. Well, we are complicated. We can do some pretty strange things from time to time. People aren't going to understand. So his words were so simple but so true. Don't expect people to understand. Do what's right. Don't compromise your values. Don't compromise your principles out of fear of what other people will think. It seems that the harm of that compromise, and just to summarize this whole thing, to have others find out your dark secrets is unpleasant. I know that. But the harm of compromising your principles, isn't that worse? What's worse? Having a little bit of a tarnished image versus compromising some really important principles and values. So we can't afford to make those terrible compromises. So this is the message. So, when Sri Krishna in these couple of verses is telling Arjuna, you know, what will others think? Tvam mansyante. They will think of you as being uparatam, as running away from ranat, from the battlefield, bhayat, due to fear. Other people are going to make wrong conclusions. Nothing we can do about it. But please bear in mind, that's not the main argument here that Sri Krishna is using. The main arguments were, Arjuna, no one's going to die. Therefore, you must fulfill your dharma. This is a secondary discussion, really part of the story. We have just a couple more verses on this topic. Let's continue. avacha vadam shabahun, avacha vadam shabahun, vadishyanti tavahitaha, vadishyanti nindantastava samhartyam, nindantastava samart, tato dukkakataram nukim, tato dukkataram nukim. Check something. All right.
Really, really nicely said here. Tava ahitaha at the end of the first line. Ahitaha. Your tava ahitaha, your enemies. Tava, your ahita is enemy. Your enemies. Vadishyanti will say what?
Avacha vadam. Vada, words which are avacha, unspeakable. They will say, your enemies will say unspeakable words. You know, when you're reading in a book and they show asterisk, exclamation mark, pound sign, those words. In English, they're like four-letter words, a lot of them. So, avacha vadam, these unspeakable curses, bahun, many, many unspeakable curses, vadishyanti, they will say. Who will say? Ahitaha, your enemies will say these many curses.
Nindantaha tava samartyam. Nindantaha, they will go on putting you down. Go on cursing you, go on blaming you, go on belittling you. Nindantaha. And what are they belittling? Tava samartyam. Your capacity, your strength, your greatness. They're going to go on putting you down, ridiculing you. And he says, tataha, than that, dukkha taram nukim. Kim, what? What could be dukkha taram? What could be more miserable, tataha, than that? What could be worse than having all of these people cursing you again and again and again, putting you down, ridiculing you? Now, very powerful language. But once again, wouldn't you agree that this is not really Sri Krishna's spiritual message to Arjuna? Sri Krishna's spiritual message to Arjuna is fight, because if you don't fight, the consequences are much worse. His message is fight because this is your responsibility. The message was fight because no one really dies anyway. So let us understand these statements as more of the story of the Mahabharata and not part of Sri Krishna's spiritual upadesha message. Then,
hato va prapsyasi svargam, hato va prapsyasi jitva va bhokshyase mahim, jitva va bhokshyase tasmaruttishta kaunteya, tasmaruttishta kaunteya yuddhaya krita nishchayah, yuddhaya krita nishchayah.
Hataha va prapsyase svargam. Hataha. Arjuna, suppose you are killed. Hata. Arjuna is stuck in the midst of his decision-making process. Should he fight? Should he leave the battlefield? So Sri Krishna is leading him through some analysis of the situation to find out what is the best thing. And so Sri Krishna says, if you stay in this battlefield, and then hataha va, suppose you're killed. If you're killed, Arjuna, if you were killed here on the battlefield, prapsyasi svargam. Prapsyasi, you will gain svargam, heaven. If you perish here on the battlefield, at least you'll go to heaven. Jitva va, or if you conquer here on the battlefield, if you reign victorious here on the battlefield, bhokshyase, you will enjoy mahim, this earth, this kingdom. If you die in a battlefield, you go to heaven. If you
conquer. If you're victorious on a battlefield, you will enjoy the kingdom that you've reclaimed. Tasmat. Therefore, utishta. Uto, get up. Therefore, get up, Kaunteya, O son of Kunti, Arjuna, get up, Yudhaya, for the sake of fighting, Krita Nishchayaha, with your mind clear, with your having ascertained clearly what is to be done, get up, get ready to fight. Now, this verse concludes this train of thought where Sri Krishna is helping Arjuna through this decision-making process. Can we take just a few minutes here and talk about how to make decisions in these really, really complicated situations? Arjuna is in this terrible mess, and we've been talking about this for many classes now, how to handle that decision-making process. In previous classes, we discussed how when your mind is tumultuous, because of your emotional reaction, suppose, in fact, this is another quiz. See, this goes back quite a few classes. Based on prior classes, this is another question to you. If you have an extremely important decision to make and your mind is very disturbed and it's a really important decision to make, you have to make that decision today, and your mind is totally overwhelmed. Your emotions are stirred up. What should you do? And if you remember our discussion many classes ago, the conclusion we made is you should decide not to decide. You should choose to postpone your decision for a time that you're thinking more clearly, for when your emotions have settled down. The analogy is at the end of chapter 1, Arjuna was totally overwhelmed. But at the end of chapter 1, Arjuna does the smartest thing possible. What is that? He does nothing. He doesn't proceed into battle, nor does he run away from the battlefield. He just stops. And that's some very practical wisdom for us all. If you have a really important decision to make, and you're really overwhelmed by your emotions and confused as what to do, the best thing we can do often is just stop, just wait, just pause. Because when our minds calm down, more wisdom will come. Now, when your mind calms down, then how to figure out in this complicated situation what is the best thing to do? In our last class, we discussed how you should try to figure out what will cause the least amount of harm to everyone involved. We also discussed how if it's not very clear to you, you should seek advice from someone who's mature, someone who's a good source of guidance. One more thing that we can add today, and a very practical bit of advice for making decisions, and that is to consider the long-term consequences of our decisions. Often when we have a decision to make, we're thinking about what will be the consequences tomorrow of this decision, what will be the consequences next week, next month. But some of our decisions have consequences years and years in the future. Sometimes we make our decisions only looking at what's right in front of us and not looking out far enough to see what are the long-term consequences of our decisions. So here's a very practical way of considering a situation. And Sri Krishna actually hinted at this when he said to Arjuna that your enemies are going to be ridiculing you avyayam, continually for generations to come, which is telling Arjuna to consider the long-term consequences of his actions, not just the short-term. In the short-term, Arjuna is thinking that he can avoid the battle and avoid the terrible bloodshed. So if Arjuna is only focused on avoiding bloodshed, he's only looking at the immediate consequences of his decisions. He's not looking at the long-term consequences of his decision. So, here's a suggestion. When you have a really complicated situation and you're not sure what is the best course of action, here's an approach. Consider taking one course of action. Consider what will be the result of that course of action 5 years in the future. 5 years is a good time because it's close enough that we can figure it out pretty accurately, but it's far enough out that we'll see some of those long-term consequences. So think of taking one course of action and imagine as clearly as you can how things would evolve out to a period of time 5 years from now. Then think if you took the other course of action. And again, play out the scenario in your mind as accurately as you can. If I do this, this will happen, then that will happen, then that will not happen, then this might happen, and then think out 5 years from now, what are the long-term consequences of that decision? If you go through this exercise fairly carefully, deliberately, give yourself some time, and figure out what will be the consequences 5 years out of your different possible courses of action, it might help you gain some clarity and some understanding about what is the best solution. And again, life is complicated. Look at Arjuna's situation. If he fights, if he doesn't fight, it's pretty rough either way. On the other hand, if Arjuna fails to fulfill his responsibilities, the consequences are far worse. Arjuna is reflecting on that. Now, when we come back together next week, we're going to be beginning the next major topic of the text. The next major topic is Karma Yoga. And Karma Yoga, in fact, is the subject matter of chapter 3, but it's such an important subject matter that it comes already here in chapter 2. There's a lot of confusion about what Karma Yoga is and what it's not, and right off when we resume next week, we'll start our discussion of Karma Yoga, and you get some real clarity, and it certainly is a topic very much applicable to all of our day-to-day situations. Good. We'll continue with that next week. We have a couple of very important announcements to make, if I can have your attention for just a minute.